Case number 09-3082, United States of America v. Terrell Graves, appellant. Ms. Rowland for the appellant, Mr. Thomas for the appellate.
May it please the court.
Good morning.
Sandra Rowland on behalf of Mr. Terrell Graves. Denial of counsel during debriefings and plea negotiations undermines the reliability and the fairness of the entire criminal proceeding.
Ms. Rowland, could you move the mic down a little bit so we can hear you? Thank you.
Is that better?
Yes.
The constitutional guarantee of counsel for the accused is not designed simply to protect the trial, because a layman is no match for a skilled prosecutor when it comes to the decision whether to confess to charges in the indictment, charges not in the indictment, whether to cooperate with the government, and under what terms. He needs a lawyer so he doesn't become victim to his own bewilderment and ignorance, the law's complexity, or an overzealous prosecutor. In this case, the prosecutor bypassed the procedures set up to provide lawyers for criminal defendants, as the Constitution requires, and in doing so, undermine the adversarial process. The government does not get to choose a defendant's lawyer. The district court does that. And it does not get to haul a defendant to its offices again and again without a lawyer at all.
Even if we agree with you about all of that, doesn't the guilty plea here act as a sort of circuit breaker?
It doesn't. We acknowledge the cases that say that, but in those cases, the constitutional violation wasn't related to the guilty plea. It was truly antecedent. In this case, it's the guilty plea process itself that is the violation, and it culminated in a guilty plea with a Rule 11 colloquy, but it's our position that those cases don't apply where the violation undermines the entire process of the guilty plea. The Supreme Court has held that the right
to counsel. Do you have a case that says that, that distinguishes the other cases on that ground?
I don't, no. I haven't been able to find any cases that address whether a guilty plea is a circuit breaker in this context. The cases cited by the government and the cases that I've seen all address the guilty plea as a circuit breaker in the context of other violations. Right to counsel is fundamental. It's required at every stage of the prosecution, and when counsel is denied at a stage that holds significant consequences for the accused, the error is structural. The Supreme Court has said that the complete denial of counsel during a critical stage of a judicial proceeding mandates a presumption of prejudice because the adversarial process itself has been rendered presumptively unreliable.
Doesn't it fold a bit into your ineffective assistance claim with respect to the plea, in the sense that effective counsel would have identified this issue under your theory, and therefore not counseled agreement to the plea?
If defense counsel had investigated the charges that were ultimately in the information, the charges that were not in the indictment, he would have necessarily had to learn the basis for those charges, and would have learned that they came from Mr. Graves and they came without counsel. His investigation.
You're talking about Sussman now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's my. I guess that's my point, is that ultimately
his investigation
all this folds into, I think, although you've separated it out as a distinct argument, and I understand why, but it seems like it folds back into ineffective assistance with respect to the plea under your theory.
I think that it could be raised under that issue, but I don't, as ineffective assistance of counsel, but I don't think that it's necessary to have done so. Certainly, Mr. Sussman's investigation involved only the charges in the indictment. There was no testimony that he investigated the charges to which Mr. Graves ultimately pled guilty. And I suppose as had he done so, he would have learned that there was no counsel. It's also, it's a bit difficult because this was not the subject of the hearing.
What about the videos that Sussman saw?
I'm sorry.
The two videos that were shown in court that he saw and defendant conceded that that was him selling to the undercover agent?
In one of the videos, it depicted a crime and in which Mr. Graves was exchanging drugs and money for money. The other one didn't. But
there was at least one, right?
You know, but there were still potential defenses to that. For example, Mr. Graves was charged with a conspiracy, and the only evidence that Mr. Sussman uncovered was the videotape sale to an undercover a confidential informant, and one cannot conspire with a confidential informant. There was no evidence of any other conspiracy involving any other person, at least was in the record or came out of Mr. Sussman's investigation. We know about this violation of the right to counsel because of the hearing on the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, which Mr. Graves filed before his sentencing. But it wasn't the subject of the hearing. And so, the court might find sort of gaps in the record because it was sort of unintentionally revealed as part of that hearing. If the court does feel that there are gaps in the record, we would ask for a remand for a hearing on the matter. If the court thinks that there is sufficient evidence in the record, we ask for the court to put Mr. Graves back and the government back at square one to remand the case to the district court with instructions to allow him to withdraw his guilty plea so that he can start anew and make his decision whether to go to trial or enter a guilty plea. At this moment, Mr. Graves has indicated he would like to go to trial. He did not want to plead guilty. If the court has no further questions, I would like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Anything else? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is L. Jackson Thomas, and I represent the United States in this appeal. The issue that appellant is advocating at this juncture is one that is not properly before this court. The fact of the matter is that appellant took a plea, said he wanted to end the controversy between the United States and himself, and cannot now raise an antecedent constitutional claim to attack the guilty plea. The notion that Mr. Grimm's representation of appellant is somehow tied to the plea proceeding is, we think, factually wrong in the sense that the intervening circumstance is the actual cooperation agreement itself, in which appellant, completely apart from the debriefing agreement, agreed that he would plead guilty to this conduct that he will ultimately plead guilty to. We think that Rule 11A2 bolsters that argument and recognizes that pleas are not conditional unless they are taken with the permission and the consent of both the government and the court. That did not happen here. So this issue of deprivation of counsel is honestly not before this court.
Do you agree that he should have had counsel when he was having these conversations with the prosecution?
Judge Brown, I would say that's not a clear issue. I think there are cases, and appellant cites a number of cases, in which, for instance, there's been an arraignment, defendant asked for counsel before counsel could reach the defendant, the police intervened and interviewed him, interrogated him again. But those situations are different than this, because there was no debriefing agreement. It seems to us that these debriefing agreements call into question whether or not the subsequent interrogations are critical stages. That's not clear. There is no case law that we can find that addresses that. So
the government's position is that this is generally okay.
The government's position is we would of course prefer that defense counsel appear at every turn, all right, in these debriefings. The question is that required under the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution? And we think that these debriefing agreements barter away, in our view, what it is that is the concern in this critical stage analysis. And it is unclear on this record and in the law whether or not that's true. So it's not clear that these are critical stages in the sense that Michigan versus Jackson is talking about. Is a lawyer required where the evidence that's provided by the defendant or the information, because it's not to be evidence, the information provided by the defendant is not to be used against him directly. The only use that the government can put it to is A, to prevent him from perjuring himself, distorting either the debriefing process or a subsequent trial, and the government can put his information to the test of a derivative use in terms of the government investigating the accuracy of the information that he gave.
If the government had arrested him pursuant to the indictment, clearly he would have been entitled to counsel. You agree with that, right?
I would agree. We would agree that the indictment begins
the
adversarial process as effectively as an arrest would have. The question is, what is the effect of this debriefing agreement? How does it impact? We know that the Sixth Amendment can be waived. Can the circumstances that affect the critical stage analysis be modified such that the subsequent debriefings are not a critical stage in the proceeding? And that question, I don't need to prevail on that question. That question is unanswered in the law and thus is not clear. And even if you resorted to plain error analysis, which we're not advocating, of course, appellant could not prevail on the erroneous prong of Volano or on the plainness prong of Volano. In addition to that, if we turn to plain error review, appellant could not prevail on the third or fourth prong because there is this intervening novation that is the cooperation agreement under which he consents to pleading guilty to the conduct that's charged in the information. So we don't think that appellant can prevail under either standard, because he's waived the argument, B, because even if you reject that argument and turn to plain error analysis, he can't prevail because he doesn't satisfy any of the prompts. Appellant contends, oh, this is a structural error. But this court's cases and Supreme Court cases say that when there is a forfeiture, the analysis is plain error review. The question of structural error is one unresolved by the Supreme Court, decided by this court as circuit law. Excuse me. But the question is, how does structural error normally control the prejudice prong under Olano? We don't reach that issue in this case because of this cooperation agreement. So, and in addition, because it's unclear in the law, appellant can't cite any cases, Judge Graham. We take the position that's why he hasn't briefed this issue of whether or not appellant had counsel in the form of Mr. Grant. We suggest that the law is in our favor in that regard. So we think that appellant does not prevail on this one. Unless there are further questions, the government will submit on a brief and ask that the court affirm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Holt.
Thank you. I'd like to make two points. One is that under the government's theory, if a defendant has been denied counsel at a critical stage, and debriefing has been held to be a critical stage, plea negotiations have been held to be a critical stage, if he ultimately pleads guilty, he hasn't been harmed. And if he goes to trial, he hasn't been harmed. So the right to counsel is rendered meaningless. The second point I'd like to make is I don't think there's any significance to the terms debriefing versus plea negotiations. You can call it what you want. The government can call it what they want. But the fact is, FBI agent O'Brien testified that the purpose of the meetings was to discuss with Mr. Graves his crimes and the possibility of cooperating with a guilty plea. That is her testimony about the purpose. So it doesn't matter what you call it. They were going to discuss whether he was going to plead guilty and cooperate, and the government provided incentives for him to cooperate, such as telling him that if he was convicted after trial, he would face life imprisonment, which, of course, ultimately wasn't true, but he did face 20 years imprisonment. We ask the court to remand the case to allow Mr. Graves to withdraw his guilty plea. Thank you.
Thank you both. Case is submitted.